All right, we are holding on Chof Dalet Omer Aleph. Yeah, I don't know. We're holding on Chof Dalet Omer Aleph, about 12 lines from the top. I don't know. Yeah, they're talking about from a, they're talking from a distance, I guess. I don't know.
Musical instruments, where are they?
They may still come. I don't know. Okay, so 11 lines from the top. Actually. Okay, we discussed in the Gemara yesterday that Rabbi Eliezer holds you're not allowed to buy the Paradruma or any other carbon from Goyim, and we discussed the various reasons why that might be. One of them, the last thing we were talking about was the reason that Shila wrote an Abraita, which is that it's Xeris HaKosiv. The Pasuk says about the Paradruma that the Yichu Elacha, that the Jewish people should buy it, should buy it. The Yichu can also mean the Yakichu, they should sell it, so therefore it has to be sold by Jews, not by Goyim. So we said, what about the story of Dalman ben Nesina's Paradruma? We said that it was bought through a middleman. A Jew bought it from Dalman ben Nesina and then in turn sold it to the Beis Hamikdash.
That's how we saw the Pasuk.
That's how Rabbi Eliezer would say that that's how it could have happened. How, on the one hand, the animal could have originally belonged to Dalman ben Nesina, and on the other hand, he has this Pasuk, the Yakichu, that it has to be bought from a Jew. That's how we that there was a third point. However, the question is, the last word of the 11th line, like in Dabba, so are you telling me after all that Rabbi Eliezer, according to Shila, is not concerned about Rabia? What brought us into this whole discussion in the first place was Rabia, and we started by arguing that maybe Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim are arguing about whether we're concerned the animal may have been used for Rabia, where if it was, it would indeed be possible for the Paradruma, as we established yesterday. But Rabbi Eliezer... We have two reasons why Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim might be arguing. One is the matter of Ravuda,
and the other one is the matter is the Yakifu thing. The question is,
are you telling me that Rabbi Eliezer is only, according to Shila, is only concerned about buying it from a Jew? He's not concerned about the Ravia situation. And therefore, in other words, all you have to do is buy it through a middleman, and you don't have a problem. No, well, the question is, but we learn in a Braisa. Now, before we get to that, I mean, the Gemara is going to bring a question from a Braisa. Tosfos points out that the Gemara could have equally well asked the fact that we said before, that Rabbi Eliezer holds this doesn't just apply to the Paradruma, it applies to all Korbanos. Hello? If it was a matter of a Yichu, the Yakichu would only apply to the Paradruma, as I said yesterday. So that alone shows that it must be something more than that. It must be that he's concerned about Ravia. However, Tosfos says the Gemara wants to, because otherwise it wouldn't apply to other Korbanos.
Right.
However, Tosfos says the Gemara would rather ask from this very same story that we're dealing with, where we see that Rabbi Eliezer holds that it's not just a matter of with the Paradruma itself. We see Rabbi Eliezer is not just concerned about the Yakichu, but he's also concerned about Ravia, because we learn in a Braisa, under the law of Rabbi Eliezer, they said to Rabbi Eliezer, you're telling me you're not allowed to buy the Paradruma from a guy. It happened once that they bought the Paradruma from a guy whose name was Dama. But Amri Law, others say Remet Shmoy, others say his name was Dama, his name was Remet. But maybe that's not necessarily the same Dama Ben Nisina as before. There were a lot of Paradrumas during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. There was one that was done by Moshe, and then from then they only did the next one they did was at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, and then after that they had those different opinions in the Mishnah, whether they had seven or nine, whether so far they've had seven or nine. So did they have six or eight during the period of the second Beis Hamikdash? No, well, we'll see later. We'll see soon that there were lines of animals that were more likely to produce a Paradruma. But the point is that they had, so different times, they had to buy them. So maybe there was the one that they bought from Dama ben Nesina. Here, according to this, could have been there was another one they bought from a fellow named Remes. Whatever. So the point is, you can buy it from a guy. Amalahan Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says to them, Misham Raya, you bring a proof from there. Yisrael, how you Misham Raya, Misham Shanelda. Jews were guarding this animal ever since it was born to make sure that Ravia does not take place with it. In other words, Rabbi Eliezer is concerned about the possibility of Ravia. So what are you telling me his only problem is because of the Xeris HaKosov? The fact that they had to have Jews watching it the whole time for protection implies that he holds that would be that you have that potential problem.
So
what are you saying that before that all they had to do is buy it through a Jewish middleman? It sounds like Rabbi Eliezer had nothing to do with Ravia. You were seeing that Rabbi Eliezer is concerned about Ravia. Yeah. The answer is Rabbi Eliezer touts. Like you would say, according to Shila, that Rabbi Eliezer is concerned about both things. Kicha. Number one is the matter of kicha, that's Xeris HaKosev, that it has to be via kichu. And number two, v'chayishnami l'ravia. And then more generally, he's concerned about ravia, which that one is not just about, not that one is not just by the Paradruma, but by Korbanos in general. So yes, according to him, you would need both. You would need Jews to be guarding it from when it was born to make sure that revia cannot happen. But even that would not be enough if you're buying it directly from the goy, because the yakehu. Therefore, you also need that it's bought through a Jewish middleman. Fine. The question now becomes like this.
So now we've proved what?
Well, we're showing so far that Rabbi Eliezer is concerned about revia. We said before the Chachamim apparently are less concerned about it, because we said that they hold you are allowed to buy the part of Rumah from Goyim without any of this being necessary, without it being needed to guard it, and without needing to buy it through a middleman, because they don't hold the Jerusha from the Yikhu V'Yakikhu, and they don't say that we have reason to be concerned, as we said before, or Chila D'Evid or whatever, about what may have happened with this animal. Of course, if we know that it was used for Rabia, of course, it's going to be possible for the part of Adroma.
What do they do with the brisa that says that they used to protect?
In that particular case, Rabbi Eliezer says they protected it, because maybe in the Chachamim at that time held like his opinion. Doesn't mean that it's actually required of the Allah. But the Chachamim would say that maybe fine, they did an extra thing. And we find a lot of extra chumras that are done with the parah adruma. So maybe this was one of them, but it's not required of the halacha, they're saying. Okay, fine. All right. Omar, so now, though, let's see. Rabbi Eliezer had said in this braisi, Yisrael ha'im mishamir nais mishar shenoda. We said Rabbi Eliezer holds that Jews were guarding this animal, this parah adruma, ever since it was born. Which means, and therefore, there's no possibility of revia. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it was required of Yalacha. The question is, though, how is that good enough? The nechush, don't we have to be concerned? Duma Rabbi le'ima ki haba ma'abra. Don't we have to be concerned that maybe the mother animal, the mother of this paradroma, was used for revia while it was pregnant with the baby, which now was born of the paradroma, and that would be a problem. The Amar Rava, because Rava says Vlad hanegachas aser, the baby of if you have a cow that gores. We learned from Baba Kama that if a cow or any kind of animal kills a person, then that animal is put to death. I show you Sokol, sorry, in this week's parasha. So what happens, Rava says, if you have a pregnant animal that gores and then kills a person, author, then the baby is also author. He of Lada Nagfu, because effectively what you have is not only the baby, the mother and the baby together participated in the goring, and therefore they're both author. And meaning, in other words, obviously we're not talking about it didn't directly, but indirectly, yeah. I mean, the fact, for example, as Mepharshim pointed out, that one thing is the mother animal is heavier now because it's pregnant. Therefore, there's more of an impact when it gores. Yeah. And therefore, the baby is also. Now, obviously, we're not talking about if the mother is given skill while it's still pregnant. Obviously, there's nothing to talk about. The baby is killed then also. We're talking about even if it gave birth. Yeah, we're talking about even if it gave birth before the skill took place. Yeah. Similarly, Vlad Hanu Bas also, similarly, a baby of an animal that was used for revia is also for a carbon. Same thing to you, Vlad Hanubu, because you consider the baby, in a certain sense, also participated in the revia. It was in the womb, but it's still considered. So you have the problem like this. So you're saying, Rabbi Eliezer, that as soon as this baby animal was born, that you could be a part of Adroma because it has the criteria for it, then Jews were immediately watching. But how do you know that during the 9 months that the mother was pregnant with the baby before? Cows are pregnant for 9 months, just like human beings.
Hold on.
That's what we have to figure out. No, wait. We haven't gotten to that point yet. Right now, for purposes of the question, the Gemara is assuming that if Revia had happened with the mother at some previous time, that wouldn't be a problem. We're only concerned if Revia took place during the pregnancy. So that's a 9 month period, but fine. How do they know 9 months ahead that a baby is going to be born?
If you're concerned for the pregnancy, you should be concerned for
Wait. The answer is, fine. Change it. Rabbi Eliezer is saying not that Jews were guarding the animal from when it was born, but from when it was conceived. And therefore, now how? Okay, so there you go. So as soon as it was conceived, they were guarding it to make sure that the mother is not used for revia.
Okay, problem still is, the nechush dilma ravua le'imam mi'ikra.
Fine, but don't we have another concern? Maybe the mother was used for revia before it ever became pregnant with this baby. And the problem with that is, d'tnan, we learn in a Mishnah,
in the Sefer Shmura, relax. Everything that you're wondering about, we're going to do.
We learn in the Mishnah in Tmura, any animal that is possible for the Mizbeach, for example, an animal that was used for Revia, or no, not Revia, anything that's possible for the Mizbeach, for example, it has a mum, let's say, v'ladisehen mutarin, their babies are mutar, so just because the mother had a mum or was a reveya or a nirva or what have you, doesn't make it mutar. Wait. The Tani Allah, but we learned a brice on it, Rabbi Yezer Oyser. Rabbi Yezer says no, no good. So if we're dealing, according to Rabbi Yezer's opinion, that according to him, it's not good, even if the mother was used for reveya before it ever became pregnant with this baby paradroma. So, let's continue. Hanicha l'rab. Now we have two ways of understanding. We have two ways of understanding the machloekas
in over there in Tumura. So hanicha l'rab. So if we go according to Rava, then it fits well. So Amar Rava Amar Rav Nachman, because Rava explained in the name of Rav Nachman over there in Tumura, in the story over there, machloekas shmiru ken mitzvashin. The machloekas is
only if the revia took place after the animal was made hektish.
So the mother animal was declared hektish, and then it was used for Rivia.
That is when. So now, obviously, the mother animal itself is possible for a korban. No question about that. Everybody agrees with that. But the Chachamim would say, nevertheless, the baby eventually, when it's born, is mutter. If the Rivia is placed while the animal is pregnant.
We said before, Rava said that's no good. We're talking about the
mother animal was used for Revia in Tishrei. In Cheshvan, it became pregnant.
It was
declared hektish in Tishrei. In Cheshvan, it was used for Revia. In Kislev, it became pregnant. So the Revia took place after it was declared hektish, because it was declared hektish in Tishrei. But Rava is saying that if the animal was chulin, and only later on was it declared hektish and then became pregnant, then everybody would agree it's mutter. So if we say according to that, very well then, all we have to say is the mother animal was never hektish in the first place. Therefore, the only concern is, again, that the mother animal may have been used for revia after it became pregnant. No problem. All you have to do is we say that as soon as they knew that it's pregnant with a potential paradroma, and the Gemara will describe soon how we know that the baby is a potential paradroma. We'll get to that, but wait. So once they know that there is that potential, then they'll start guarding it. Fine. If you understand the machlokes that way, then you're good. El lo Rav Huna bar Chinina, but according to Rav Huna bar Chinina, who learns the machlokes El Omer Rav Nachman, according to Rav Huna bar Chinina in the name of Rav Nachman, so he and Rava are disagreeing in what Rav Nachman said, that the machlokes is no, machlokes k'nirbu k'n chulin, no, the machlokes is when the revia took place when the mother animal was chulin, before it was ever declared hektish, but if the revia took place after it was declared hektish, divrei hakol asurin, then everybody agrees with Osir. Well, then, then what are you going to say? Then in that case, according to, we're saying, Rabbi Eliezer would say that it's Osir, no matter when the revia happened, even if it was before the pregnancy. So what are you going to do? How are you going to have, mainly you can watch the animal from when it became pregnant with a potential paradroma, but how are you going to have been watching it since it was born to make sure that no revia happened to it?
To watch every potential animal that can get.
Well, that's what we have to figure out. That's what we have to figure out. Right. Now, the question is, a couple of Mepharshim asked the question, the Ritva, Rabbi Yaakov Emden asked the question, didn't we establish before that if a female animal is used for Revia, it makes it infertile? Why are we concerned that the animal was used for Revia and then later on became pregnant? So the Ritva says it's not necessarily a hard and fast rule. It may become infertile. It's not necessarily a given that it will. And then the Rabbi Yaakov Emden talks differently. He gives a different explanation that what we're talking about over here. What did he say? That the concern is that while the mother of the paradroma, while it was in the womb before it was born, maybe its mother was used for revia. And therefore, again, we had Rava's rule before that he of Ladanirvu. So therefore, now it's considered that this animal experienced revia. Wait. Okay. Ema, so we have to say, fine, Yisrael ha'im ha'shamer and oisa le'ima m'shash and oisra. Fine, we'll change it, that the Jewish people were guarding the mother animal from when it was conceived. Okay, the question still is, v'nechush duma rabua le'ima de'ima. Okay, but like you said, why don't we go back even another generation and say that maybe the grandmother animal was used for revia? The answer is, kulahai le'chashinen, we're not concerned to that extent. Especially because Mepharshim point out, really,
to the extent of the grandmother,
right. Especially because Mepharshim point out, really this whole concept that we're saying that this whole concept that we're saying the baby of an animal that was used for revia that it should be possible according to Rabbi Eliezer, or according to, in some cases maybe according to the Chachamim, really it's not that minatora or something that should be also. Minatora would only be if the animal itself was used for revia, or at least fine if it was in the womb at the time that the revia took place. This whole thing that we're saying that it should be also if it happened with the mother even before it became pregnant is more a matter of that's a gnai. That's a disgusting thing to use it for a carbon. So therefore, we're not going to go so far back as to say that because the grandmother was used for revia, therefore that it should affect the grandchild animal. We're not going to do that. Especially some of the Mefarshim bring up a point. You have the Gemara there discusses in Temura. There's an issue called Zevezeh Gerdin. There's an issue that sometimes what you have, actually Tosfos mentioned the matter briefly over here, that you have Rabbi Eliezer holds that Zevezeh Gerdin, which we're going to deal with later in the Masechta, sometimes you can have something which is created by two different things, one of which is also and one of which is mutter. We'll deal with it later on in the Masechta in connection with, for example, plants that grew on fertilizer that was also as Avodah Zarah, but they also grew from sunlight and water and whatever that is not. So we'll deal with it later on in the Mems, but the point is, If the mother animal was used for revia, that's why Rabbi Eliezer was saying that's also because Zevezeh Gerdin. You have a mother animal that was also because of revia. You have a father animal that's mutter because no revia was done with it. Zevezeh Gerdin is also. But to go so far back, to go back two generations and say because one of its four grandparents was used for revia, that we're not going to say. Because you only have one out of four that's problematic, and that's not enough even for Rabbi Eliezer to answer it. So as long as we know that the mother was, as long as we know that as soon as the grandmother animal became pregnant with the mother,
from then on, we're guarding it to make sure that it's never used for the via, then that's good enough. We're not concerned what may have happened with the grandmother animal.
Generally speaking, we mentioned before that conceivably goyim could do revia with male animals, but more usually they would do it with female animals.
Okay. You're already shush.
Fine.
Two generations.
Okay, so then maybe they had to watch the father's own. Okay, fine. Okay. Okay, well, now we have to figure out. Amamar, so we said, Yisrael ha'i mashamri noisa mashasha noisra. So now we're saying that Jews are guarding it ever since it was conceived, or now we're saying maybe ever since the mother was conceived. The question is, Minayadin, and how are we supposed to know that this animal is a potential parah druma that we should start that we should start looking out for it?
It may have been bred by...
Ah, so the answer is, one second, Amar of Kahana, Kois Adam Mavir Lefanea. What we do is we bring a red cup or a cup full of red liquid or whatever in front of the mother animal, the Shasha Oyla Zachar, when the male was mating with it, and like we have with Yaakov with his sticks, what an animal sees, and for that matter what a human being sees during conception, has a very strong influence on how the baby turns out. So therefore, by putting a red cup in front of it, it makes it more likely that it will produce a parah druma. So the question. One second. The question. It could be just a red cup. Yeah. The question is, well, if it's so easy to produce a parah druma, then why are parah drumas so expensive? And we said yesterday that the Chachamim were ready to offer Dhamma Ben Nisina 600,000 or 800,000 dinner for it. If it's that easy, the answer is Hoyle Shtei Cyrus Poispusva. Yes, but on the other hand, you have to realize two hairs of a different color will pass all the whole animal. Yes, you can use a red cup to make that the animal will be more red than it otherwise would be. But to have it completely red, and in fact, it's not just the hairs, the Mishnah and Parah deals with the question, what if the horns are a different color? What if the hooves are a different color? You have to cut them off.
Cannot be red.
Yeah, apparently, there's a Mishnah in Parah that talks about it, that if they're a different color, then you have to cut them off or something in order to make the animal kosher. So to have that kind of thing. But the point is, still, that it's extremely rare to have that it should be 100% red. Okay, so the question is, my shna did who? Fine, but then in that case, why? It may be hard to do, but in that case, why to accomplish that a fully red parah druma could be born? Fine. But if you're saying that to make it more likely by using a red cup when the animal is mating and becoming pregnant, then why are you going to a goy first and doing it, and then do it? Do it with a Jew's load of cows. Go to a Jew who has a cow that's going to be bred and put a red cup in front of it, and that way we can have a parah adumah born to a Jew, and then we don't have all the complications that we were dealing with.
If we use genetics,
the answer is it is genetics.
You mean if you use genetic engineering
or whatever to produce a red cow? The answer is, Amar Rav Kahana b'muchzefes. So Rav Kahana says, because you have a genetic line over here that has a chazaka of producing red cows. That, in other words, all you have to do is trigger it by, for example, using a red cup, and you'll make it more likely. So in other words, without the red cup, you might have, I don't know, one out of every 100 animals in this line will be born red. Like this, with the red cup, you're increasing the chances for, let's say, 10 out of 10 or whatever it is out of 100. But still, fine. You're still going to have, most of them are not going to be 100% red. You're still going to have various psulim in one or another of them. But at least you're making the chances better that you'll be able to get a parah adumah. So it so happened, Dama ben Nesina, or Remetz, as we said earlier on the Amud, had such a line of cows that genetically are more likely to produce parah adumah. So therefore, they would use the red cup trick with them. But so that the bottom line is, therefore, so because they knew that Dama ben Nesina or Remetz or whoever had a line of cows that can produce parah adumah, therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, they would know as soon as an animal that could potentially produce a parah adumah becomes, as soon as it's going to conceive, from then on, you have to be watching it to make sure the riyah doesn't take place, because according to Rabbi Eliezer, otherwise you would have a problem. And therefore, that's it. That's why they would be watching that particular herd and no other, because they know once they did the red cup trick, and they know that this line of cows produces parah adumah, then they will be watching it so that to make sure that if one that could be valid as a parah adumah is born, then there won't be any problems with it from the reveal. Yeah, we're talking about the whole thing revealed. Yeah, this is what we've been talking about. Revia, that we're talking about all this time, is a Mishka Behema, is a man having relations with an animal. Yeah.
If another animal has, right.
First, this points out, obviously, I mean, we can't say, for example, we know that the parah adumah itself can never have borne a yoke. And that also means that it can never have been bred. Because again, like we said yesterday, where when the animals mate front to back, so that the male animal has to rest his weight on the female, and therefore that would make it possible. The point is, Tosfos says, obviously we can't apply that to the mother, because otherwise there couldn't be a parah adumah. Of necessity, the mother has to be bred.
So
we don't say that kind of thing possible to the mother, but according to Rabbi Eliezer, if a human being has relations with the mother animal, it'll make the daughter animal possible. That's what we're saying.
But one second, when the parah adumah is born,
yeah,
it's not red.
Sure it is. Born red.
The minute it's born?
Yeah. Why would it be not?
Why would it take time?
No, an animal is born with hair.
Color of eyes and color of hair don't come.
Color of eyes doesn't matter. The color of eyes doesn't matter.
Even the hair doesn't.
Definitely
color immediately after birth.
Okay, so maybe some of them start out reddish and then gradually develop a deeper red shade. I don't know, whatever. But whatever it is, when it's born, you can already see that it's a potential parah adumah.
So this trip with the cup was just like an extra thing, or they had to do this?
So apparently it was an extra thing. Apparently it was, you needed both. You needed a genetic line of cows that are already known to produce parah adumah. And then you use the red cup trick to make it more likely. Again, somewhat similar to Yaakov with the sticks, where he needed a line of sheep that already are known to produce spotted and speckled and what have you sheep. And then he used his sticks to make it happen more often.
So the would always know if this is going to be born. It was like, it wasn't a surprise that they heard about it from a different place, that they were involved in this process.
Apparently, yeah. That's what we're saying. Yeah. Right. Well, again, this is all according to Rabbi Eliezer. According to the Chachamim, not necessarily is all that needed. I mean, maybe the Chachamim wouldn't disagree with the red cup thing. Maybe they would agree that, practically speaking, you need something to induce the animal to be more likely to produce a red cow, but they wouldn't hold the whole thing of guarding it because they're not concerned about that. They say, if we know that it was used for Revia, then you have a problem, but if not, then not. Okay, let's. Continuing the discussion. Yosef Rav Ami v'Rav Yitzchok Nafcha. One time Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchok Nafcha were sitting by the entrance or the porch of Rav Yitzchok Nafcha's house. Akila Rashi translates as a porch. So they were once sitting there. Pasach Chad Minayo V'Oma, one of them started the conversation as follows. We quoted before, V'chein Ha'i Rabbi Eliezer Poitel B'Cholak Avonis, that just as Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to buy the parah adumah from a goy, either because of the Yakichu or because of Revi'ah, or both. So also he says the same is true of all other korbanos, korban, all of them, that you're not allowed to buy them from a goy because of the possibility of Revi'ah. Pasach idach minayu. So the other one spoke up and then said, "My oitzibulei chabroi leRabbi Eliezer." So what did Rabbi Eliezer's colleagues answer him? How did they refute his position and say that's not so? We hold you're allowed to get korbanos from goyim. Because the Pasuk says, as we quoted yesterday, Pasuk in Yeshaya called Saint Kedar Yikobzol, all the sheep of Kedar, which is one of the sons of Yishmael, will be gathered to you and they'll be brought as korbanos. Kedar is a nation of Goyim, because they're one of the descendants of Yishmael. So we see that animals from Goyim are allowed to be brought as korbanos. However, Amalehen Rabbi Eliezer, so what does Rabbi Eliezer answer back? Kulam Gedim Gurim Heim Ma'atid Lovat. Fine, but all the goyim are going to be gurim in the sense that they're going to drag themselves along and come to try to be nisgayer. Now, we won't accept that because we won't accept gedim gurim Mashiach, but they will be gurim in the sense that we used the word gedim gurim earlier in the Sefer also at the beginning of the first parak, that gedim gurim means people who are not accepted as gedim, but they voluntarily schlep themselves along saying that we want to be part of the Jewish people, and they start following the Torah on their own. So like they schlep themselves into it. Gurim means that. So they're all Gedim, Gurim, Lost, and Lovely. In that case, then they're not going to intervene. Gurim, Meloshim, Gorah, Meloshim, like they're dragging themselves in. So therefore, so if they're all Gedim, Gurim, then therefore, so there's a problem. They're not going to be doing the Via. So therefore, that's why you're allowed to use their animals. Amr of Yosef, my cross. So Rav Yosef says, where do you have a process where you see that idea? Process says, famous process. He at the Halam and Safa Gurim of Gomer. Then at that time, I'll turn that all the nations will have a clear language. And the Pasuk says that they'll all serve Hashem. We could call them B'Shem Hashem. They'll all call on the name of Hashem. So Amalei Abaya. So Abaya asks Rav Yosef, okay, maybe it means that the time the Goyim will give up of a desire. Who says it means they're going to give up other Averis as well? Maybe they'll still be prone to Revi'ah. The answer is Amalei Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says yes, but the Pasuk continues that they will all serve Hashem, Shechem Echad, which Shechem literally means a shoulder, so it means shoulder to shoulder with the Jewish people. In other words, that they're going to be keeping the same mitzvahs as we do. Not they're not going to be getting credit for it because they're not mitzvah of Oyster because they didn't become Gerim, because we're not accepting them as Gerim. But nevertheless, they're going to be keeping all the mitzvahs that we do, including therefore not doing Revi'ah. So therefore, that's it. Apparently, they'll be voluntarily keeping Shabbos. Apparently that's what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. Well, they're Shanachad, yeah. So it doesn't mean they're going to be required to because they're forced not Gerim. But on the other hand, they're voluntarily going to be keeping mitzvahs and whatever mitzvahs that they can, including therefore they're not going to be doing Revi'ah.
Without being chazmish.
Without, right. Wait, huh? If they don't do Revi'ah, of course they're not.
No.
Oh, you mean Kazakhum Shishavas Chazmish. Okay, it's a good question. I don't know. All right. Maybe they won't. Maybe they won't keep the ones that they're not allowed to while off on it. Whatever it is, the point is that at least we don't have to be concerned about Revi'ah then. And in fact, the Yerushalmi spells out that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that the Amoroim say about what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, that there's a vast difference between Mashiach's times and now. There's also a vast difference between what may have happened with the animal before, what versus what will happen with it later, as we said before in the Gemara. So, yeah. Okay. Rapapa Masni Haki. So Rapapa learned that the discussion between Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yitzchak Napa and Rabbi Yosef and Abaya went like we just said. Rav Zvid learned that the discussion went as follows. Not that we had Rav Ami say, Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak Napa, one of them beginning the conversation, the other one continuing it, then Rav Yosef bringing a proof from a prophet, Abaya asking a question, and Rav Yosef replying to the question. That was Rav Papa's version. Rav Zvid's version is the same conversation took place, but not necessarily was it the same speakers. The Tarvayu Amri, he says that both of them, Rabbi Yitzchak Napa and Rav Ami, both said, "B'chein ha'yir Rabbi Eliezer posel b'chol ha'korbanos," that Rabbi Eliezer would say that it's possible to buy any korban from a goy. And the Tarvayu Amri, and it's both of them, not just one of them replying, saying, "Umayo yisivu lechavroi l'Rabbi Eliezer kol tzein kedu yikav tzolach l'gomer." Both of them pointed out that the other Chachamim mentioned him, the pasuk called tzein keder, to show that there's no issue with buying korbanos from goyim. And
Did he didn't know about this
Amar Rabbi Eliezer, call him Gurim, hang lots of love. That's the answer. Rabbi Eliezer is saying, I know that prophet, but they're going to be Gerim Gurim. They're going to be pretending to be Jews, lots of love. Therefore, there's not going to be any Revere. Therefore, you can't bring a proof from that for nowadays. For Micra, and according to the second version, according to the second version, Rabbi Eliezer himself brings the proof from the pasuk Ki Azeh Pacham. And Micra, what are the pasuk where we see that the Goyim are going to be Gerim Gurim Lost Love, right? Is because Ki Azeh Pacham and Safa Gurim, that I'll turn, that all the nations will have a clear language. Likre Kolim B'Shem Hashem, they will all call in the name of Hashem. But now on that, in the second version, Maktifah of Yosef. According to the second version, it's not Abaya who asked the question, but rather of Yosef who asked the question. That maybe they're only giving up of a desire of loss of love, but not necessarily other Averis. And Omalei Abaya, and according to the second version, it's Abaya who answers, not Rabbi Yosef, who answers, they're going to be doing the same mitzvahs as we do. So it's the same. The first version you had between Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, one of them stating that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, the other one stating the Chachamim's opinion. The other one stating the Chachamim's opinion and Rabbi Eliezer's answer. Rabbi Yosef bringing the proof to what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. Abaya asking on that proof, and Rabbi Yosef answering how the proof is valid. How Rabbi Eliezer's proof is valid from that passage is valid. According to the second version, both Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha said what Rabbi Eliezer holds and what the Chachamim holds, and they brought the proof from Piyazet B'Chalamim. We have Rabbi Yosef asking on that and Abaya answering on that. So it's the same four. It's the same four Chachamim involved, but it's a different, two different versions of how the conversation went. Who said, or who asked what? Fine. Mason, the Gemara says, fine. I have a contradiction, though. You're telling me, Rabbi Eliezer, that you're not allowed to get animals for korbanos from goyim. But fine. Rabbi Eliezer is saying ma'asid lava is different. But in our times, before Mashiach comes, you're not allowed. What about, you have a pasuk in Parashas Vayomer Moshe, that Paro wants to keep the animals of the Jewish people back in Mitzrayim. And Moshe tells them, not only we're going to take all our animals, but you're even going to give us animals for Korbanos. So what do you mean you're going to give us animals for Korbanos if you're not allowed to, if there's a concern about Revia, according to everybody else? The answer is Kodem Matan Torah, shiny. Okay, different before Matan Torah. Okay. As the Gemara says, in some places, Nitna Torah and Eschatin Halacha, once the Torah was given, the new Halachas come into existence, including the Issur of Revia and Nirva. By the way, some of the Foshim ask, why aren't we concerned about the question that the animals may have been worshipped as of a desire, which is also possible for Korbanos? And one answer is, the very fact that you're saying, in our connection over here, if Moshe is telling Paro, you're going to give us animals for Korbanos, and we know an animal that was Nevad, that was worshipped as of a desire, is possible for Korban, the Mitzrim worship sheep, and they worship animals and whatever, why aren't we concerned about that? And one issue, that's exactly the answer, that if they're worshipping them, they're not going to be giving them as korbanos to bring to Hashem. The point still remains. Any animal that they worshipped, obviously they're not going to be giving to the Jewish people to sacrifice to Hashem. And if they do, it's considered bittul, they're mevatel, they're avodah zarah, and we'll deal with later on in the Masechta that a goy is able to be mevatel as avodah zarah.
They only
worship sheep, fine, so then the concern is sheep. Fine, the concern is sheep. Moshe doesn't specify what animals they're going to be giving.
No, you shouldn't have any concern about sheep because they worship cows. But you should have concern about cows and...
I don't understand. Because they worship sheep, you would have a concern because they're also to use as a carbon. Because
they would not have revere with something that they worship.
Never mind revere. First of all, they might. Avodah Zarah, right. Never. Different issue. Okay. Fine. Toshma, come, let's bring a proof from another thing, last week's parasha, by Yikach Yisrei Choshen Moshe Olu Zvachim Levekim, it says that Yisrei brought Korbanos to Hashem. And again, the question is, Yisrei is a goy. So some of them are partially explained. The question isn't maybe so much on Yisrei. Fine, Yisrei is becoming a ger. He's coming there to become a ger. Obviously, we're not suspecting that he's doing revia. The problem is that the animals were his before while he was a goy. Or the question is that maybe he bought the animals from his local goyish neighbors. Whatever the answer is, Yisrei nami kodem matan Torah. But the answer is no problem. Yisrei, the whole story with Yisrei also took place before matan Torah. The question is not necessarily. That works out according to the opinion. The Gemara has a machlokas about this at the end of Zvachim. about, there's one opinion is that Yisroel, that the story with Yisroel was before Matan Torah, which is where it comes in the topic, because it's after the war with Amalek and before Matan Torah. So when it points out, everything is written chronologically. El the Mandal Yisroel after Matan Torah. But it points the opinion that Yisroel is the story of Yisroel after Matan Torah. And the reason why the Gemara talks about it in the Zachim over there is because the Gemara is discussing the question, did there exist such a thing as Shlomim before Matan Torah? The Pasuk says that Yisroel brought Olo with Shlomim. So if you're going to say he brought Shlomim, well, that's the question. If you say he came before Matan Torah, it means there had to have been Shlomim able to be done before Matan Torah. If you say it was after Matan Torah, then no, maybe before Matan Torah, you weren't allowed to do Shlomim. Because the whole concept that there should be a Shlomim, that you bring a korban and then a human being eats some of it, not necessarily. Did such a thing exist before Matan Torah? That you bring a korban and you burn it completely, yes, I am sure. But that the but that you should eat it, because that's what a shlomim is.
The opposite, the whole Torah Kula, so they have to have korbanos.
What does it mean he did Kula Torah Kula? I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that he did it, that he actually kept the mitzvahs the way we keep them. It could mean that he kept them on a ruchnius tikkun level. It talks about chassidus, for example, speaking of Yaakov's stick, that that's how he accomplished what we accomplished with tefillin, for example. So, it's not necessarily... Not necessarily was there such a thing as shlomim before Matan Torah. The concept that there should be able to be, that you have something which is brought to the korban, but you're...
After Matan Torah.
Yeah. Could have been only after Matan Torah. That's the point. That's what the Gemara discussed over there. It doesn't say one way or the other. That's why the Gemara discussed it. Yeah? Anyway. So if we say that Yisroel only was after Matan Torah, and Tosfos points out, by the way, that of necessity, especially Rashi points out on the pasuk, of necessity, there are certain parts of the story that definitely happened after Matan Torah. The whole part where Yisroel sees Moshe judging the people and giving the advice to appoint judges and all, sorry, I love them, sorry, nay, so whatever, Rashi points out, that can have only happened after Matan Torah, because it can only have happened after Moshe came down from Har Sinai the third time with the Lord, because in before Matan Torah, Moshe can't be saying that I'm teaching the people Hashem's laws, because there aren't any yet. After Matan Torah, he's busy for the first 40 days, the second 40 days, the third 40 days, only after Yom Kippur is he sitting down to judge the people. So that part definitely took place after Matan Torah. The question is, the first part, is it that Yisroel came before Matan Torah, and he's still around 4 months later, or is it that he first came only after Matan Torah? Anyway. So then what are you going to say? If Yisroel only came after Matan Torah, then you already have the halacha then that an animal that was used for revia is offered. So again, the question is either the fact that it was owned by Yisroel himself before, and we don't know what might have happened with it, or that, again, this is all according to Rabbi Eliezer, or that he bought it from his Goyish neighbors in Midian or wherever, or he bought it from traders in the desert. The answer is, Yisroel mi Yisroel Zavan. So we have to answer, okay, of necessity, we would have to say, according to that Yisroel must have bought his animals for korbanos from Jews. So in that case, no problem.
Because
otherwise we have no way. Otherwise, according to Rabbi Eliezer, there's no way to make it work. If you say that Yisroel came after Matan Torah, right, if you say that Yisroel came after Matan Torah, then there's no, according to Rabbi Eliezer, there'd be no way to make it work unless he bought it from a Jew.
If it was before
Matan Torah, then at Matan Torah everybody became. If he came before Matan Torah, at Matan Torah everybody became Gerus. That we learn the halachas of Gerus from what we did by Matan Torah. I mean, Mila, Tvila, and Karban. The Karban being in this week's parasha, the Mila being before you see the Mitzrayim. If you say he came after Matan Torah, then it was full-fledged Gerus. Just the opposite. If he came after Matan Torah, he's becoming a ger, but how is he able to bring his animals as korbanos? That's the question. And the answer is he had to buy them from Jews. By the way, as far as I forgot to mention before, I was trying to find it now because I couldn't remember it, but before, when we were talking about the thing that Rabbi Eliezer was saying that the goyim are going to be geared and brooded and lost of love, and therefore we're not concerned about revia, the Sefer Avoidus Avoida from the Plymouth Plugger has a different take on the whole thing. He learns that actually if a goy brings a korban, it's allowed to be a revia or a nirba. It's only the issue of revia or nirba applies only to korbanos brought by Jews. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer can be saying that therefore, fine, they're gerim grurim, they're still goyim. They won't have become gerim because there's no gerim laws of Bavli.
It wouldn't bring a korban from a goy, where there's a moon.
Where there's a moon.
But if
We said that. So that's one explanation. That we said Tomadreid Abishmal. Not necessarily does Rabbi Eliezer have to agree to that. Rabbi Eliezer might hold that a goy's korban is allowed to be a revea or a nira. Maybe, but nevertheless, so therefore he could say they're gerim, grurim, lost of love. Therefore, there's no problem if they bring an animal that was used for revea. I mean, that's how the avodah is avodah. But anyway, just an interesting sign.
So,
because he would say there's a difference. Because the whole concept that revea passes it, we learn from a pasuk, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban lashem, in a behemah, in a brachah, in a tzoyin. That's mikem daber of bnei Yisrael, Adam ki yakriv mikem. So it only applies to you Jewish people. It doesn't necessarily apply to goyim. Fine. Tashma, come, let's bring a proof from another case where we see that animals that belong to goyim.
We spoke at length about goyim having revea, and now we're saying suddenly.
That's the question. No. What we're saying is, for a goy to bring a korban, according to that, wouldn't be a problem. But for a Jew to bring a korban that used to belong to a goy, that would be a problem, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Yeah. The question isn't who did revea with it. Obviously, we're not suspecting in the first place a Jew did revea with it.
Right.
We're talking about a Jew buying it from a goy who may have done revea with it. Rabbi Eliezer would say is a problem. Yeah, also possible. Okay. Tashma, come, let's bring another proof where we have another case where animals that used to belong to goyim are going to be brought for a korban. Vayom Shol, Shol says, after when it was Shmuel that told him to wipe out Amalek and he left the animals alive, etc. So Shol defends himself. Now Amalek, Shmuel asks, if you destroyed everything, if you did it, what's the noise that I hear? Somebody says on it, by the way, that this is a good pun, and that this is a good pun in the pasuk. Shol answers, they brought him from the The people had Rachmanus on the or had whatever they wanted to keep. Rachmal isn't the right word. They spared the best of the almeit of atzoyin v'abakar, the best of the sheep and the cattle. The people spared the best of the sheep and the cattle. Okay, this that we have in parentheses, a mishnah about korin ba'alatzayin, is rooting from a different pasuk earlier in that korin. It doesn't belong over here. L'man zvoyach l'Hashem alakasei, in order to bring a korban to Hashem. Now, Shmuel gives it to him for the fact that he left the animals alive, that he violated what Hashem said, but he doesn't object to the basic idea that korban, that animals from the Amalekim could conceivably be brought as korbanot. Shol also knows the halacha, so according to everybody else, how would that work? Now, the Yerushalmi says, okay, you can't really bring a proof from Shmuel, you can't ask from Shol, he wasn't really acting properly as Bechlal, leaving these animals alive, but Al Gemara doesn't want that. Al Gemara wants to find a way that at least we're not going to say that Shol is blatantly making a mistake in that, according to everybody else. The answer is, my metav, may metav. The answer is that, according to Rabbi Eliezer, we would understand that Shmuel is not saying the best animals themselves are going to be brought as korbanos. Yes, because there's a concern about revea. But what we'll do is we'll sell them and use the money of them to buy animals that will be brought as korbanos. So the question is, my shna metav, in that case, why are they not sparing the best animals? In that case, if they're going to be selling them anyway, they might as well just spare any random animal. The answer is yes. You're looking for Salei and Tina. Fine, because you want people to buy them quickly so they can raise the money to buy new animals for korbanos. Doesn't mean necessarily that these animals themselves that used to belong to the Amalekim would have been brought as korbanos. So that Rabbi Eliezer can learn it that way. He's not contradicted by that pasuk. Fine. Tashma, come, let's bring from another pasuk. You have at the end of Sefer Shmuel, it tells how Hashem told there was plague in David's time. Hashem told David to go to the spot where the Mizbeach is eventually going to be built for the Beit Mikdash and buy that land from Aravna HaYabusi and set up a Mizbeach and bring korbanos over there. So the pasuk says, "Vayomer Aravna al David." So Aravna says to David, "Yikach v'yal Adoni Amelach hatoy ve'enov. Let my master, the king, take and bring us korbanos."
Is the one who had the land?
He had the land. Yeah, he owned the land at the time. Yeah,
he was a Yevusi.
But he's a goy. So he says to David, "Yikach v'yal Adoni Amelach hatoy ve'enov. Let my master, the king, take and bring us korbanos, whatever he sees fit to do. See, I'm even giving you a bokel oil. I'll give you the cattle to bring for a korban oil. But a merigim and the merigim, which we'll describe soon what the merigim are, or kleya bokel and the other instruments that are used together with cattle, like the yoke and whatever, the things that are made out of wood, la'etim, you can use for firewood. So therefore, you see, Aravne is offering his animals for korbanos, and it doesn't say that David turned them down. So the prophet says that David said, I'm not going to take it for free. I'm going to pay for it because I don't want to take it. But he didn't have a problem taking them, apparently. The answer is Amar of Nachman, Aravna Ger Toshav. The answer is Aravna with a Ger Toshav. A Ger Toshav is keeping the seven mitzvahs. So therefore, he's not doing Arayas. Revia is part of the Arayas. So therefore, no problem. From him, you'd be allowed to buy animals even according to WS. My merigim, so now since we mentioned this topic with Aravna, when Aravna is offering his various farm tools to be used for firewood, what are merigim? Of all of Mitzvah Turvil, it's a bed of turvil. Well, so that was a term that they were familiar with in Eretz Yisrael. In Bavel, they weren't familiar with that term, so they had to translate, my Mitzvah Turvil. All of us from Eretz Yisrael. He traveled back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. So he spoke Eretz Yisrael, Aramaic. But in Bavel, they needed a translation of a translation. The answer is what we call it, in Bavel, they call it Iza de Kurkasa de Daishan. The Iza literally means a goat of Kurkasa that they use for threshing. So what is it? Rashi describes it like this. It's a big, thick piece of wood with grooves cut into the bottom. They use it for threshing wheat. Now, when you have wheat or barley or whatever has to be threshed, you have to break open the shells to get out the kernels from them. So what you do is you take this kind of thing, a threshing sledge, it's called in English. It has all of these grooves and whatever on the bottom of it. So therefore, when you press it down heavily over the wheat and over the wheat, then it breaks open. They get into the grooves over there. The edges of the grooves are sharp, and they break open. They break open the shells over there. And now afterwards you can blow away the shells and the chaff and whatever, and you're left with the clean grain. So that was what Aravna was offering to use for firewood. Amar of Yosef Maikra, so Rav Yosef says, where is a pasuk that we see that we can see what a murig is? A pasuk in Yeshaya, Hine Samtich, Hashem says to the Jewish people, Hine, behold, Samtich, I have made you l'morag chorutz chadosh, I've made you like a new morag, a new threshing sledge, chorutz, that has grooves in it, chadosh, that's new, in other words, and therefore the edges of the grooves are still sharp and cutting, Baal Pifios, which has very sharp cutting edges, the Todush Horim Batodik, you will be able to trample down mountains, meaning the powerful goyim, and crush them. The Ugvoris Hamot Potim, and the hills. Hashem is speaking to the Jewish people that I'm going to give you, Jewish people, the power that you're going to overcome your enemies. Ugvoris Hamot Potim, and you will make the hills to be like chaff, like the shells that get blown away by the wind. The point is, we see from that passage that a morag has cutting edges, it has chorus, it has grooves, and it has cutting edges, and that's exactly what a threshing sledge is, that it has those grooves and cutting edges in order to cut open the in order to break open the shell so you can get the grain. Okay. So the Eliezer would say that the case with David and Aravna and Aravna's animals is not a problem. Aravna being Ger Toshav, you're allowed to buy animals. Some of the Rishonim have a gear sense that they're
talking.
He himself is offering the animals. That means he knows that they haven't been used for this. He was pasturing them himself or whatever. We said before that animals that were by a goyish shepherd, that we're saying the shepherd is afraid to do anything because he's afraid that the owner of the animals will find out because it takes a thief to catch a thief, as it takes a liar to catch a liar, as we said the other day. So therefore, even if Aravna had a shepherd taking care of these animals, there wouldn't necessarily be a problem.
He would find out.
He would find out, right? Some of the Rishonim, by the way, have a girsa, not ger tosha, but ger tzedek, that Aravna was actually a ger tzedek, and in that case, there's no issue. Mesfer, the Gemara says, now I have another contradiction again, another pasuk that seems to contradict Rabbi Eliezer. Again, another, we're bringing all the pasukim that we can find anywhere in Tanakh, where we see that animals of goyim are used as korbanos. Now, you have a...
Why is
because each one we're showing up, each one we're saying, Rabbi Eliezer doesn't have a problem with that pasuk, because you don't understand it differently.
Right.
Now, this story that we're going to tell, we need some background. Okay, so you have a story in you have a story in Sefer Shmuel's Aron. The Plishtim captured the Aron when they destroyed Mishkan Shiloh, defeated the Jewish people in battle, and captured the Aron. They take it back to one of their cities, Ashdod, I think, whatever. They put it in the temple of their Getchka, and the next couple of days they're finding every day the idol is fallen down and broken apart or whatever. And they don't get the hint. So they start suffering all kinds of diseases, and mice attacking them, and pulling out their kishkas, and then harming their crops and whatever. It's all in the land of Plishtim.
Which
it's in Sefer Shmuel. It's Sefer Shmuel, per hay vav and zayin. Hay and vav, rather, I should say. So they start suffering all these kinds of diseases and problems with mice and their crops and whatever. And this goes on for a couple of months. They're moving it from one city to another, and every city that it comes to, the problems are developing over there. Yeah. So eventually they realize, you know what? Look, we got to send back the Aron. And obviously the Jewish God is angry at us. We got to send back the Aron. So they send it back together with a box full of golden gifts that they're donating to Hashem. And now what did the one second. These being Plishtim, and we learned before the Plishtim were Leitzim, they don't take things seriously enough, they still have people thinking, but maybe the whole thing is just a coincidence. So they decided we're going to try it like this. We're going to send back the Aron on a wagon. Fine. What kind of animals are going to pull the wagon? We're going to take two mother animals. First of all, cows don't usually pull a wagon at all. You usually have bulls, male animals. Like this one means female ones, which are weaker. Number two, they're ones that have babies. We're going to keep the babies in the house. We're going to keep the babies locked up. And naturally, by Bederach HaTeva, the mothers would want to stay with their babies. They're not going to be willing to go anywhere. Like this, we'll see. Are they going to pull the wagon with the Aron in the direction of the Jewish territory? Then fine. Then we'll understand that the whole thing happened because of Hashem. If that whole thing was Min HaShemayim. If not, then we'll figure it was just coincidence. Well, so the mothers would not do such a thing, right? So, like this, sure enough, the mother, the babies were kept up, locked up in the house, yeah. But anyway, sure enough, the animals pulled the wagon. They started going straight. And they came to Jewish territory, to the city of Beit Shemesh, which is the nearest Jewish city. And the Jews who were working there in the field were very happy to see the Aron, and they unhitched the wagon and brought the animals of Korban. So that's where this comes in. They have a parent halu oil Hashem. The pasuk says that they brought the cows as korbanos ola to Hashem. So, well, there you go. We have animals that used to belong to the Christian, and now they're used to belong to the Jew, and now are being used as korbanos. So, what is it remembered from? The answer is Hadas Shah. So Rabbi Yehuda would answer that this was a specifically because of the nest that happened with them. This that they brought the Aron on their own. Nobody's leading them. They knew the right way to go. They're not staying there with their babies. They said Shira on the way, as the Gemara is going to say later. All those nishim, then the cows themselves said Shira. Yes. But because of all of that, the Jewish people realized that maybe there was a Navi there to tell them. I guess Hadas Shah would mean there was a Navi there to tell them. That specifically in this case, we make an exception. One of the Mephoshim points out, in fact, you know, we had a few days ago, we had in the story of Reb Meir saving his sister-in-law from the Kubba Shal Zonis, we said over there that if Reb Eliezer said to himself that if she's committed Averis while she's there, she won't be worthy to have a nest happen, and then it'll be too dangerous to try and get her out. If not, then not. By the same logic over here, if these animals had been used for purposes that are also for Revia, then none of these theories of Nissen would have happened with them. The very fact that it was worthy to happen shows that, okay, the Gemara says, so therefore it was a Hirat Shah, so Rabbi Eliezer doesn't have a problem with that. And the Gemara says, talking down in the Sabbath. Yeah, as a matter of fact, it seems logical to say that that's the case, that here was a special case. The Ela came up with, because otherwise, if you're not going to say it was a Hirat Shah, then you have a different issue. Ola in the cave of Mizuka, really ever have that a female animal was brought as an Ola. Here the prophet is saying they brought these two animals as an Ola. An Ola is always a male animal. Here you're telling me they brought female animals. So obviously that was an exception. So by the same logic, there could have been an exception to the rules about usually you can't bring korbanos that used to belong to them. The Gemara says, "My kusha, why do you find that to be such a compelling question? Maybe Dilma b'bama yaka, because maybe it's different when you bring a korban on a private bama. Now this was again Mishkan Shiloh had been destroyed. At that point, the Mishkan had been moved to the city of Nod. While this Mishkan was in Noiv and later on in Zivon, the halacha was, the Gemara tells us in a few places, including also there at the end of Zafim, that during that period you were allowed to bring karbonas anywhere, you were allowed to bring karbonas anywhere, on a private bar. You didn't have to bring them to the Mishkan. Well, this is during that period. Therefore, they don't have to go all the way to Noiv to bring the korban. They can do it right there in Beit Shemesh. They can set up an ad hoc bummer, an ad hoc mizbeach, and bring the korban on it. And a bummer fiyachid, the dinim are different. The chidr of Adaba Abba. And in fact, we see that, like the Adaba Abba says, the Omer of Adaba Abba, minayin ma'olam the keva sheik shed of a bummer fiyachid. How do we know that a female ola is kosher on a private bummer? That it has to be a male animal is only true when you're bringing it on the central mizbeach. Shenema, because you have a prophet, a couple of chapters later on in Shmuel. It describes over there how later on, the Jewish people were again being threatened by the Plishtim, and they're pleading with Shmuel to daven on their behalf to Hashem, and he's forced them to save them. By Yitach Shmuel Tulei Cholava, the prophet says, so Shmuel took a milk lamb, by Yalehu and brought to the carbon, a milk lamb, Rashi explains, means a female animal that was nursing, that was giving milk. By Yalehu Ola, and he brought it as an Ola. So there, and this was a bomb of Yafet, because again, this is when the Mishkan was in Noiv, this is a few years after the previous story. So there you go then, so you're allowed to. The question is, by Yalehu is also a mashma. The word by Yalehu is male. It is masculine form. So it was a male animal. The answer is, Omer of Nachum Yitzchok, by Yalehu. Yes, we have a Kriya Ksiv there in the prophet. The Ksiv is by Yalecha without the Vav, which therefore is Vav Yud Ayin Lalehe. It's written the Yaleh, which is by Yaleh, which therefore we can read as by Yalecha, he brought her. So the Kri is by Yalehu. The Kri is by Yalehu. No, by Yalehu means he brought him, meaning a male animal, to her. So some of them are Persian, actually.
What can we read who? I mean,
well, so that's the point. So in other words, it was a female animal, but it was a female animal, and therefore you have the ksiv that says by Yaleha, that he brought her. The ksiv is by Yaleha, without the bob. And the ksiv is by Yalehu, he brought it. So actually, some of them are Persian, learn differently than Rashi. Rashi is saying the animal was actually female. Some of the other mafreshim explain that. No, as a matter of fact, tlei cholav means a baby nursing animal, in other words, that is still nursing from its mother. It was a male. However, the Kriya Ksiv teaches us that it would have been equally kosher had it been a female. By Yalecha, it could have equally well been a female, and it would have been just as kosher because it was a bama fiyachid, because it was a private bama outside the Mishkan. So therefore, in Beit Shemesh, when the Oren came, they were allowed, so therefore, on that basis, you don't have to say they had a harasha to bring these female cows as korbanos ola, because you were allowed to anyway, on a bamas yachid. The only exception we could say, according to Rabbi Eliezer, though, we would have to say there was an exception to the fact that in the fact that they brought them as korbanos, when usually you don't bring animals that came from goyim as korbanos. But this would be an exception. So far we've had a number of different answers in the Gemara, going back to, now this next piece of Gemara is going all the way back to the beginning of the Sugya.
So where do we stand now?
So far where we stand is, fine, Rebbe Eliezer is saying that you're not allowed to buy animals from Goyim for Karbonas, with the exceptions that we said. So we said, for example, if he was a Ger Toshav, then fine. If it's before Matan Torah, then fine. If he bought it from Jews, like we say in Yisrael may have, then fine. If you're selling them and using them to buy other animals, like by Amalek, also fine. If the guy is a Ger Toshav, like a Ravna, also fine. If there's an exception, if there's a Hirashah, then also fine. But otherwise, the halacha is not like a Rabbi Yezir. The halacha is like a Chacham. So therefore, according to the Chacham, you wouldn't need any of these answers. But now, going all the way back, though, at the beginning of the studio, we got into this whole discussion because our Mishnah had said that you're not allowed to stable animals by a goy because we're concerned that the goy may do the deal with them. On the other hand, we know according to the Chachamim, you're allowed to buy animals for karbanos from goyim, which led us into this whole discussion. So the question is, how do we reconcile them? So again, there's a few answers so far. We have the first answer in the Gemara, based on what Rav says, that a goy is not going to do revia with his own animal, because he doesn't want to ruin itself. He doesn't want to make it infertile to ruin itself or whatever. But because, again, a Jew's animal is not going to be by him for very long. Yeah. We had another answer that there's a difference between what might happen in the future and what did happen in the past. We had then Rav Pedasa's answer that our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Eliezer, and the Braisa is according to the Chachamim, which led us into the whole discussion of Rabbi Eliezer versus the Chachamim. Now we have a fourth answer. Rabbi Yochanan says, it's not necessarily that you can just buy any animal from a goy for Kavanah. Even the Chachamim would not necessarily say that. He says, Gvul Yeshla, there is a boundary, there's a limit in the animal's age. Right, there's a limit with the animal's age. If the animal is less than 3 years old when it is used for revia, when a human being uses it for revia, then it will become infertile from that. So therefore, if you buy the animal less than 3 years old, then there's no problem, because the goy is not going to do that, because as we said before, he's not going to want to weaken his animal. He's not right. On the other hand, once the animal is 3 years old already, that's not going to affect it. Therefore, if you're going to buy an animal over 3 years old from a goy, you would in fact have a problem, says Rabbi Yochanan.
So again, our Mishnah is saying you're not allowed to stable animals by goyim, because when it comes to a Jew's animal, he's not going to care either way. Yeah, he was saying when it comes to kavanah, there's a difference between older and younger than 3 years. Okay. So they asked on the Jewish and all these various tukim that we quoted, where we see that they took animals from goyim and used them for kavanah. Shani lohu kotin rav gimel shanim, and he answered in each of those cases, we're talking the animals were less than 3 years old.
So
therefore, there was no problem. Toshma, however, though, then they brought the one about, there's one about when the Oren was returned, that a part of Hail Ola Hashem, where it says they brought the cow as an Ola Hashem.
So the question is, and again, he answered the Chosim Vath Shalosh Shonim. So fine, Rabbi Yochanan would want to answer the animals were less than 3 years old. However, Mas Yuflot of Huna Breder of Nasan, 1 second, Rav Huna Breder of Nasan asks on that, Im Kain, if you're going to say like that, Hainu Vesneim Kolu Baboyis, what about, we see clearly these animals had already given birth, because it says they kept their babies locked up in the house.
Chosim Vath Gimel Shonim, so if an animal is less than 3 years old, is it the chlau able to give birth? But we learn in a braisa, or one second, how can it have given birth yet?
Okay, we have a better example. How can an animal 3 years old pull the
It was a nest, then it was a nest. Fine, that's not the question. Remember, the pushmen themselves only figured that we're doing this as a test to see how powerful our Hashem is. But the Valtanya is actually a Mishnah, it's a Valtanan,
right.
Part of a Chamur Mibat Gimel. Suppose you have, now we know that you have a male Bechor has to be given, a kosher animal has to be given to the Kohen and brought to the Kohen, who nowadays he waits till it develops a mum and eats it.
Right.
And a Bechor of a Chamur, you have to redeem with a set.
Right.
So what happens, if you buy a cow or you buy a female donkey from a goy. Now you don't know, did it have babies before that or not? But now, when it gives birth to a male, is it a bechor or not? If the animal is less than 3 years old when you bought it, and now it has its first baby, and now it has a baby, which is a male, v'adei l'koyin, and there's no question it goes to the koyin, so there's no question that's its first baby, because it can't have given birth before that, mikan v'elach sofik, but if you bought the animal more than 3 years old, it would be a sofik, because maybe it had a baby before, maybe not.
Right.
The point is that we see clearly that an animal less than 3 years old cannot give birth. Now, Tosfos, by the way, points out, nowadays that's not necessarily the case. Nowadays we do have cows that give birth at age two. Tosfos says the nature of animals has changed. This brings an example from Cholin, where you see that there's a certain thing about an animal's lungs. The Gemara mentioned that Cholin being a very rare thing, whereas nowadays it's almost universal. A certain structure on the lung, a certain lobe on the lung, interstitial divide, it's called Aramaic. We'll learn about it in Cholin later this year, as then. But nowadays, most animals have it. So you see that the animal never see the return. Anyway, so therefore,
so again, so obviously these cows that were used to pull the wagon,
obviously they were at least 3 years old, otherwise they couldn't have had babies. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding, how could you use them for korbanos?
So therefore, it's clear we have to answer that. We have to answer, like we said before, that it was hirdoshra, that it was a special case, that no matter how old the animals were, it was hirdoshra that you're able to bring them as korbanos and not be concerned about any possibilities of revia. Interesting thing, by the way, as a side thing, since the Gemara is mentioning over here that a cow usually cannot give birth if it's over 3 years old. Now, Rabbi Eliezer actually, if it's less than 3 years old. Now, Tosfos points out that actually Rabbi Eliezer is still more machmer than the Chachamim, because he would say even the fact is, he says the Parah Adruma, the proper age for a Parah Adruma, he says in the first Mishnah in Parah, is 2 years old. 2 years old, we're saying can't give birth yet. We're saying therefore that on the face of it, the animal, the goy wouldn't do revia with it because he doesn't want to ruin its fertility. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer is still concerned and says that you can't buy it from a goy. So I wanted to mention in this connection an interesting side thing. The Medrash says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai and learning the Torah from Hashem, he hears Hashem saying over the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Parah, that begins, Rabbi Eliezer Oimer Egla Bas Shnaso Parah Bas Shtayim. The Egla Arufa has to be a year old. The Parah has to be 2 years old. And Moshe Rabbeinu is very impressed. And he says, he asks Hashem, I want that this Rabbi Eliezer should be one of my descendants. So they ask the question, what's he so impressed about? Okay, Rabbi Eliezer has his opinion about the age of the Parah Adruma. So what? The Halacha is not even like him. The Chachamim and the Mishnah say that there's no limit on the age of the Parah Adruma. Practically speaking, you don't want to let it grow too old because it's likely to develop black hairs, but in principle, there doesn't have to be. So why is he so impressed? Yeah. So they say a vote on this. No. They say a vote on it like this. What is the reason for Parah Adruma? Well, we know it's a chuk. It's the classic chuk. However, Rashi on the Pesukim there in Parshas Chukas brings an idea from a Moshe Adarshan that to make up for the Cheta Egel, the mother animal come and clean up the filth caused by its baby, the Egel, an Egel being a baby cow. So therefore, the Chachamim who say that the Parah Adruma can be old enough to be a mother, fine, not that it is, because it can never have been mated, but it is at least old enough. Fine, so therefore they can understand that's an idea behind Parah Adruma. Rabbi Eliezer, who davka holds the Parah Adruma has to be so young that it can't even possibly be a mother yet. So he obviously, therefore, he must know some other reason behind Parah Adruma, aside from this idea about the relationship with the Hegel. And that's what impressed Moshe Rabbeinu. That evidently we don't know, but whatever it is, the fact that Rabbi Eliezer apparently knew some other deeper reason for it, that impressed Moshe Rabbeinu.
Wow.
All right, so now continuing, now since we talked about... since we talked about the story with the cow is bringing back the Aron, so now the Gemara is going to digress a bit to tell a little bit about that story. And the Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes how the cows were pulling the wagon, Vayishana ha-pores baderech, the pores were Vayishana on the way, al derech Beis Shemesh, on the road to Beis Shemesh, the grammar, my Vayishana. Now what does Vayishana mean? Now, on the face of it, it comes
Beit Shemesh is not the actual Beit Shemesh.
No, it's not the modern Beit Shemesh. It's close to it, at least.
How far?
I don't know. But whatever it is, that was the nearest city to Plishti territory. Yeah, that was the nearest Jewish city to Plishti territory at that time. Yeah. Okay. So now, on the face of it, Vayishana means they walked straight. But the thing is, there's a number of reasons why the Gemara doesn't like that simple pshat. One of them is, Marsha points out, the word is kind of a hybrid. The yud is masculine, the nun he is feminine, so that's a hybrid word. So therefore, the Gemara is going to understand it. The Gemara wants to understand it in different ways.
Instead of saying Vatishana,
it should have said Vatishana, right? So my Vayishana, Amr Rav Yechanan, Mishum Rameir, Shomer Shira. The cows sang Shira as they were pulling the wagon.
It should have said Vatishana.
No, but therefore Vayishana, Meloshen Shir.
Vatishana is also
Russian. Okay, but the Vayishana is Meloshon Oz Yashir. It's in Meloshon Oz Yashir. It makes a difference. But that would, because otherwise, if it had just said Vatishana, we wouldn't have any reason to douse in anything from it at all. Okay, they walked straight. But the fact that... understood. But then you wouldn't have a reason to douse in it. The very fact that it says Vayishana forces us to say that there's a douse in it. Yeah. Okay. Sha'amur Shira. Now, some of the Mefarshim say that it literally means that they said Shira with the various words that the Gemara is going to discuss soon, a number of different opinions, what they sang. And in fact, that brings the Ritzvah to ask, we know that among the 10 things Hashem created Erev Shabbos Bein HaShemashos is the mouth of Bilam's donkey that spoke. Why aren't we listing the mouths of these cows that spoke? He says because that's once Hashem created that possibility in the world that animals can speak by Bilam's donkey, it includes any of the other cases in history where that would happen. including this case, well, and including this case also of the cows. Okay, so that so they sanction. They sang Shira.
When were they at the shrine?
Yeah, well, we'll see soon which Shira it was. Wait, but they sang a Shira. They sang a Shira. Which Shira it was, we're going to discuss. There's different other Mepharshim. Some of the Mepharshim say that it just means that they were mooing, and we could understand from their mooing what they were trying to express.
The cows,
yeah. The Pasuk actually, yeah. The Pasuk says they're holich the goy. They were going and mooing. So therefore, they were mooing, and then from that, you could understand what they were saying. Okay. It's not just that they sang Shira. They turned their faces straight towards the Aron and sang Shira. Meaning they're pulling the wagon. On the face of it, they would have their backs to the Aron. They turn themselves around out of respect for the Aron. Al derech, like when human beings carry the Aron where they're supposed to be facing it. The Marsha seems to say that it also means the babies. Even though the babies are locked up in the house, they're naturally facing towards the Aron and singing Shira as well, not being upset that their mothers have left them, but rather singing Shira out of respect for the Aron that their mothers are pulling. Well, my Shira, Amru, so what is the Shira that these cows sang? Amr of Yechon Mishrim Meir, they sang, Oz Yashu Moshe of Nei Yisrael. You're saying it's the same thing as you see at Mitzrayim. So they sang the song Oz Yashu. Now Rashi explains it wasn't necessarily the same song Oz Yashu that we say every day in Davening, but it was a similar concept, because what is Oz Yashu about? Ki goy goy, that Hashem showed great power and great pride and whatever against the Mitzrayim and destroyed them. Well, by the same thing over here, Hashem showed tremendous power in what he did to the Plishtim during those months when they had the Aron. And then punishing their, and then destroying their Geshke Dogon and so forth. So it was a similar kind of thing. Marsha points out also in the Shira, we have Chil Ochaz Yoshe Plushes, that the people of Plushes were frightened, so therefore it was a very appropriate. Plushes is the land of the Plishtim, it's the Gaza Strip in that general area. So they were singing Oz Yoshe. That's Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yochanan Didei Omer. Rabbi Yochanan on his own says a different explanation. They sang the pasuk from Yeshaya. Va'amartim bayemahu hodu l'Hashem kiru b'shmoi v'grena. Rabbi Shimon Lakish Omer Mizmora Yasmer. Rabbi Shimon Lakish says they sang the orphaned Mizmor. What is that? Mizmor shiru l'Hashem shechadosh kiniflaisa. So hashir le'yimin Israel kachoy. Kapitel tadi chesed tilim. It's called Mizmor Yosoim. Rashi says, because it doesn't say who said it. Tosfos points out, it's not just that, you have many kapitlach that doesn't say who said them, but it doesn't say what the occasion was that it was said for. It just says Mizmer, and then Kineshiru L'Hashem Shir Chodesh. Unlike all the other ones, where either it says a name of an author, David or Moshe or whoever, or it says an occasion for which it was written. Here it says Mizmer. So that was the one, says
Rishon. Why didn't you say the reason?
What do you mean? Why? Because it's called Mizmer Yosef, it's called the orphaned Mizmer.
Yeah, but
so,
why was it orphaned?
Okay, so some of the Mepharshim say that there's a different... What different Mepharshim talk about, the different reasons, the different opinions that we have in the Gemara here, what the cow is saying, what's the reason behind these different opinions. So Marsha points out each one of these sukkim or mizmorim that they're mentioning expresses some other facet of the nest that happened over here, how Hashem overpowered the goyim and showed his boss. And then showed the honor that Aron is worthy of. Some of the Mepharshim point out also that the idea is, in that capital, Tzadik Ches, it talks about that Hashem, the Hashia lo Yemino Yisrael Kotcher, like Hashem, so to speak, has to save himself, because all his chosim aren't enough to accomplish it. So therefore, it's called Mizmor Yosim, in the sense, like, we're orphans who can't help ourselves, and only Hashem can do it, because all his chosim are not enough, and therefore it's called Mizmor Yosim.
What are these parts in Parashil make any difference?
I don't know.
Who heard the singing?
So that's the thing. If we say that it was actual words, like the Ritva says, then it means anybody who was watching them go could hear it. If we're saying that it was mooing and only if that they're mooing or whatever, and only if you understand the language of the animals, then okay, only the people who understand the language of the animals would understand it.
Someone must have understood it because they are just
right. Well, obviously, so the Chachamim had a Kabbalah for what it was that they said. And again, you have different Mepharshim talk about different nuances, why each of these things would be appropriate to the circumstances. Again, Oz Yashir, because it talks about how Hashem defeated the Goyim and saved the Jewish people. Right, no, they're walking on their own, but eventually when they came to Beis Shemesh, then the people heard them, I guess, yeah. And afterward, and Hashem eventually told Shmuel to write down in the pasuk over there, Vayishana HaParos. So therefore, obviously, it means that that Shmuel knew by Nevuah that they had actually sung.
What's the other meaning of Vayishana?
We said that they went straight.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But here we're darshaning Lashon Shu. Okay. By the way, I mean, it talks about there's a number of places in Chassidus where it talks about there's actually a mimer from there's a mimer on the Lechut Torah that mentions this. There's a mimer from the Rebbe Maharash on this pasuk Vayishana HaParos. One thing that they point out in a lot of these places is how comes it that these animals, the same Shira in the first place, is we know you have the Chayas HaKodesh, who one of their faces is Pnei Shur. They have the face of an ox. These animals over here that are pulling the Aron are temporarily were on the level of the highest HaKodesh. Therefore, just as the highest HaKodesh sing and praise Hashem, so these animals also were. And in particular, in some places, in some of these Maimarim, it talks about that this was a foretaste of how it'll be La'asid Lava. Kapitel Tzadik Ches is specifically associated with La'asid Lava, because Mizmor Shiru Lashem Shir Chodesh, Shir in Lashon Zachar, as opposed to all the Shiros that we sing in previous times are all in feminine form, because it's all a temporary Ga'ula. Shira with a hey.
Oh,
with a hey. Yeah. Only in Mashiach times will we have Shir Chodesh, as we say at the end of Magid in the Haggadah. So therefore, Mizmor Shir Lashem Shir Chodesh, this kapitel, Tzadik Ches, is particularly associated with the Geula, and therefore, since this was a Me'ein of La'asid Lavoi, then therefore they sang, according to that opinion, therefore, is why they sang particularly that kapitel.
The
goyim, maybe they heard it, maybe they didn't. I don't know.
It depends.
It depends whether we say that they actually sang it in words or whether they sang it by their actions or whatever. But
you said it was heard up to when?
When they came to Beit Shemesh, I'm saying. So that they sang, we're saying, is a given. But whether a person walking by would necessarily understand from it, it depends. According to the Ritva, apparently yes. According to
all the cows were turning themselves back to the Aron.
People would notice there's something unusual, yeah, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they would hear them singing a shira. But okay. So anyway, Rabbi Loza Omar Hashem Moloch Yugzamim. Rabbi Loza says they sang Kapitel Tzadik Zion. Rabbi Shmuel Nachmani Omar Hashem Moloch Geus Lovish. Rabbi Shmuel Nachmani says they sang Hashem Moloch Geus Lovish, which is Kapitel Tzadik Gimel. It's Maariv time now, so we'll stop, and the Gemara is going to continue tomorrow. We'll have Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, who has yet another opinion. He has a kind of a unique song that we don't find any place else other than our Gemara over here, that he says that the cow is sang in honor of the Aron. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. That's the shame.
Go ahead.
Yeah.